Penguin Random House Audio presents The Amen Effect, Ancient Wisdom to Mend Our Broken Hearts and World. This is the author, Sharon Brouse. For Eva, Sammy, and Levi, you are my wildest dream. Va'afachti evlam l'sason, v'nichamtim v'simachtim migonam. I will transform their anguish into joy, uncovering solace and even delight amidst their heartache. Jeremiah 31:13. Introduction. And you, and you, and you, you have to give people hope. Harvey Milk. There's an old story of a child walking in a forest surrounded by sun-dappled oak trees. He climbs through the brambles and plays in the fallen leaves, mesmerized by spider webs and mossy rocks, until the moment he realizes that he is completely lost. He tries to find his way out, but each path seems to lead him deeper into the forest. As the sun begins to sink, he grows increasingly afraid, wondering if he'll ever make it home. But just then, he sees another child approaching in the distance. He excitedly cries out to her, "I'm so relieved to see you. I'm lost. Can you point me to the way out of here?" "I wish I could," she says. "I'm lost too. But take my hand. We'll find our way through this forest together." I had always imagined that the role of clergy was to navigate moments of crisis and rupture, with the right combination of solace, inspiration, and challenge. From the pulpit, at the graveside, in public protest, comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. 2 decades in the rabbinate have only reinforced my sense that the way that we show up in the great liminal moments really does matter. What I didn't expect is that our presence in the quiet moments in between matters just as much, in the everyday searching, the struggles, the successes, and the striving. As I look back at the last 20 years, I see the film reel speeding through tragedy and triumph, heartache and harmony. But what appears in my mind's eye in slow motion are the moments of human connection between and in the midst of the wind, the earthquakes, and the fires. When we, lost in our heartache, yearning, confusion, take one another's hand and make our way through the forest together. Holding hands at the bedside as we help usher a beloved from this world, giving them permission to go, promising that they'll never be forgotten. Witnessing love skeptics find their way into one another's hearts and celebrating that sometimes, in life's radical unpredictability, we get love. Locking arms in the center of a downtown intersection, lifting our voices in solidarity and song, weeping and dreaming of a different future. Coming back together after the pandemic kept us apart, knowing we would never again take for granted the simple blessing of meeting each other in harmony. Kneeling at the graveside and with our own hands placing earth on the wooden coffin of a loved one taken from this world too soon, crying out from the depths of sorrow and singing together from that same sorrow. It's in these times that I feel the weight of the work, the privilege of being alive, the blessing of being so close to such raw beauty and pain. It's there that I have learned the power of saying amen to one another's grief and joy, sorrow and celebration with our very presence, of bearing witness to profound suffering and protesting injustice with our very presence, of comforting and consoling, surviving and thriving with our very presence. What I've learned during the years is the meaning of sacred companionship. I've seen in ways subtle and pronounced a longing to connect with others who can help hold the pain, a need to share what we've learned in the trenches, and a desire to give even when we ourselves have barely caught our breath. And I've seen how knowing that we're not alone can both heighten our joy and help us endure unimaginable hardship. This book is my attempt to capture some of what I've learned from listening deeply to the ancient wisdom of my tradition while encountering those most affecting, most human moments. Reflecting on these experiences, I'm struck by the essential nature of the bonds of togetherness. I've learned that human beings are fundamentally deeply relational beings, with an innate yearning to be known, to be seen, imperfect and striving, to find our way through the forest together. That very human longing for connection in our most intimate relationships, in community, with strangers, perhaps with God, is what I call the Amen effect. It is a spiritual strategy, a sacred call to the faithful and the cynical, the believer and the atheist, perhaps especially to those alienated by religious certainties, but still yearning to find meaning in moments both sacred and mundane. It's rooted in an ancient, hard-won wisdom that offers us tools to navigate times of heartache and uncertainty with a deeper sense of meaning, direction, and connection. At the heart of this book is the lived experience of building and pastoring to Ikar, the community I co-founded in Los Angeles, California in 2004. I became a rabbi in the early 2000s, a time in which so many young Jews had abandoned synagogue life that many Jewish communal leaders had become single-minded in their obsession with the continuity crisis, a demographic disaster in the making. Conferences, retreats, all kinds of desperate strategies were devised in an attempt to win over a generation of young people increasingly repelled by the religious establishment. The disengagement crisis was not unique to Judaism. Synagogues, churches, mosques were all struggling to maintain relevance to a generation that prided itself on being spiritual, but not religious. It was clear there was a deeper, more foundational brokenness in religious life that needed to be addressed. Half a century earlier, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel had offered a scathing critique of American religious life. Religion declined, not because it was refuted, but because it became irrelevant, dull, oppressive, insipid. What young people need, he wrote, is not religious tranquilizers, religion as diversion, religion as entertainment, but spiritual audacity, intellectual guts, the power of defiance. I resonated deeply with that call. At the turn of the millennium, the dull conformity of organized religion was matched by an additional challenge, simultaneously new and very old: faith as a dominant force for regression and repression, vitriol and violence. God and faith abused, contorted, distorted to serve the political interests of the powerful rather than the spiritual needs of the people. For my generation, the answer was simple. Most refused to choose between religion that was deadly and religion that was already dead. They fled institutional religion. Having moved from my beloved New York City to Los Angeles, I found myself in the land of movie deals and artisanal margaritas, yearning to connect with others who shared my sense that in a world of violence, disease, poverty, and racism, faith communities had a moral mandate that we were failing to meet. In the spring of 2004, I landed in the living room of two strangers, friends of friends, Melissa and Adam. They were both whip smart, deeply curious, and ready to dedicate themselves to the greater good. We were joined by a few others, deeply and diversely invested in their Jewish identities and profoundly concerned about the world. We talked about the state of religious life in America and what we dreamed might be possible. I shared the two questions that literally kept me up at night. How can our Jewish tradition help us live lives of meaning and purpose? And given our faith and our history, who are we called to be in this time of moral crisis? We launched Ikar, our best attempt to address those questions on a hope and a prayer, with no funding, no space, no business plan. What we had was a shared conviction that faith communities needed to be spiritually alive and morally courageous at the same time. The coffee should be good, the music should be great, the sermons should be brave, and the ethos should be ever evolving. A local professor got a hold of my admittedly earnest vision statement and shared it with his graduate students, calling it overambitious hype. "Mark my words," he said, "in 6 months, no one will remember the name Ikar."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?